With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Celtic Now. I'm for our podcast. My name is Ryan Clifford, and once again, we're joined by William Glavin. Once again, as a former agent, just so people have listened to the podcast before. He's currently doing a bit of scouting as well. He's joining us today as well. William, how's things, mate?
Not bad, Ryan. How are you doing yourself?
Not bad, mate. The sun's out again, so we're all happy clappers today again.
Quite right, mate.
How's the old scouting game going so far, mate, in the last few days? Any updates?
There's not really been much updates so far. I was going to say I'm feeling good, but I would have been better if Denmark won the other night, eh?
I know.
In that England game. And especially the way they won it as well. You're just like, geez, oh. So, listen, we all just need to get our beer Moretti's and our Peroni's bought on Sunday and get plenty of pizza and bought at that boat, and hopefully we can see the Italians win, eh?
I'd be a bit of a sucker punch for them, wouldn't it? Because let's be honest, it's...
I know. It's on a plate for them, isn't it? Excuse the pun, but they've had that many games at home. Do you know what I mean? I think Chiellini said that today, didn't they? They should be in the final because they've had 6 or 7 games at home. So, listen, you never know. It's 90 minutes of football, isn't it? Or I could imagine 20 minutes. But anyway, it's a game of football. We'll see what happens.
Because that was actually through what he says about Chiellini, but I actually watched it with Simon Jordan.
I've
seen, and even he was saying, he says, let's be honest, guys, he says, see if we had Italy's route, would we be in the final? And he's like, I don't know. He says Austria are a tough nut to crack.
Uh-huh.
He says, and the thing is, he was like, Spain are still regarded as one of the best footballing nations about. Mm-hmm. And he says, and obviously Belgium, I don't think they're the best team, but they're ranked the best team. So he says, could we cope with that? He says, let's be honest, he says, with a group that we even had, he says, Scotland, I would have a draw, he says, but the rest, we should be beaten. And then he says, obviously Ukraine and the other teams he beat, he says, we've had 6 games, 5 games at home, we really should be getting to a final. He says, he's kind of like, I don't know why there's all this uproar, it's a dream and it's this. He says, realistically, he says, if we didn't get to the final, then it'd be a bit of failure because we've had the easy way out. And you get a bit of backlash for it, but I like Simon Jordan, a lot of people don't like him. But I do like him. I don't really listen to talk sport a lot, but the wee snips I see him, and I think he was honest. I think he spoke with Eddie Howe as well actually a few days ago. And he was like, Eddie Howe, he bottled it. And he says, look where he is now. He can't get a job. He says, I know people on that show kind of belittle Scottish football. He says, but Rangers and Celtic, he says, they're two massive clubs. They're massive, massive jobs. He says, he's went from Bournemouth to Celtic, he says, and he's knocked it back. He says, I don't understand that, but I do like Sam Jordan, but talking about England, he was basically saying you need to settle down. He says, this is a tough Italy team. He says, it's going to be hard to win. And for me, I think Italy's a brilliant team. How like your Ferdinands, your Nevilles, and whatever else can talk down to them? I don't understand it. They were unbeaten in how many games? It's phenomenal.
I know. Do you know what? I've got the qualms with England team, England players. I like a lot of the players, to be honest. A lot of world-class players there. It's the whole coverage here that just gets to me. See, like, the coverage on the TV and the radio. And you can, as you said, Real Ferdinand basically said the other night, I don't care who we're playing, we'll beat them. You know, and all right, there's confidence, but there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And I think there is a bit of arrogance there. And I think the English don't realise that that's why people want to see them beat, because there is that arrogance with it. As I said, I've not got any issues with the players and the manager, then that at all. I just think the coverage, it just goes way over the top. I didn't hear, I've heard Simon Jordan a couple of times on Talk Sport, isn't it? He's on.
Yeah.
And I've only heard him a couple of times on it, and I know he's quite regular on it nowadays, but he generally speaks his mind, and see someone that speaks their mind and just being completely honest with their opinion, you can't ask for any more than that, whether you agree with that opinion or not. So it's quite good to actually hear him say something like that, and somebody's actually come out and said that, because that's exactly how the whole of Scotland are feeling at the minute, I think.
Because as you mentioned about people who say their opinions, no matter if they're talking rubbish or they're talking the truth, it's good for people to listen, and so, hi, that's true. But the thing I don't get with radio stations is, I know it happens, you'll probably think it as well, it doesn't just happen up here, it happens down south. People will say things just to get a reaction and get viewers, and for me, I don't like that. I know that's it's a game and they want people to phone in and blah, 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 but some of the people that phone in, and don't just up here, but down south, and I'm like, mate, why are you phoning in and balancing with some of the comments? But they are gaining the fire by reacting to them. I'm like, just tell them the truth and say, mate, you're talking away at your deaf ear, and cut them off. But they continue to keep them on, and I think that's why people, especially maybe up here on Super Scoreboard, they tend to switch off, because they're letting people on who don't really know much about football. They're just, I was a guy the other day, he was talking about, I can't remember the guy's name, I'm sure he was a Rangers fan, but he was talking about Celtic's targets. He says, he's a Celtic fan, sorry William. And he was it was a Celtic fan, actually, I can't remember the guy's name, but I was sitting in my old man listening, and I don't really listen to it anymore, because last year I just thought it was just against Celtic no matter what, right? And he was blaming off all these players, or he'd be good. My dad's like, that's the guys that are rumoured. You don't know nothing about these players. he's just took them off the press or the radio and go, aye, he'd be good.
Hold, I'm like, up. Yeah.
Because there's seven guys rumoured does mean the seven guys are going to come.
I'll be honest, I don't listen to Super Scoreboard. Very, very rarely do I listen to it, but because I just get frustrated with some of the people that phone. It's like, I don't know what you call it in the radio or the sort of media, the TV world, but it's like clickbait, isn't it? It's like you get clickbait for like on websites and stuff, but it's just a form of that, isn't it? Just to get people to rise to it. And I think TalkSport do it pretty badly, well, not bad, they probably do it pretty well because people do react to it, but they do it a lot as well, don't they? So, listen, I suppose that's just one way of generating a debate, isn't it?
I think that's especially obviously the rule, because the football's only just starting, and obviously lockdown, they've had to do clickbaits, they've had to do something, and obviously because Celtic might be last season, we're not doing very well, they've obviously had to say something about Celtic to get Celtic fans to phone in, because let's be honest, they want two fans to phone in. Obviously, they want everybody to phone in, but predominantly in Glasgow and Scotland, that is the two sides that are going to kind of argue their points and stuff. But again, radio stations, I'm not really a big fan of my preferred, obviously podcasts and stuff. I'm mad into that. But as I spoke before, we came on, that's pre-season underway. A good exercise against Sheffield Wednesday. I know it looked a bit weird, just looked at a training match. But again, I was not really surprised with obviously the lineup, getting the guys who have been training the first few weeks a chance, and I thought a few guys, obviously I know it's a pre-season game, but the start of that didn't start really well. We looked a bit out of place, but as the game grew, you could see some of the quality overtaking, and what I liked was after the first half an hour, and then they came out, I think it was a 5 minute break or something, they came out the second half with a spark and a big massive, like, it was an injector pace, and I was like, that's obviously the manager's when they went, listen, that was no good enough. You need to up it. And I think, I can't even tell it was after the game, if it was a wee youngster, Moffat. Somebody says, he told us at half time that it wasn't good enough. And I can afford to myself, I could tell, because they came out with a bit more cutting edge and they were spraying the ball about. And I thought, if you can do that within half an hour in a pre season game, for me, that's a good incentive for the rest of the season that you can actually change a game.
Yeah, I think. When Sheffield Wednesday got that early goal, you sort of saw, and obviously we need to remember that a lot of young boys or the youngsters from the academy were obviously playing there the other day. And Sheffield Wednesday had quite a strong team when looking at their sort of starting lineup. But from when Sheffield Wednesday scored, you sort of saw the boys or the players sort of striking out themselves a wee bit, and you're like, oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. So obviously at the break, like you said, I think Ange had obviously told them one or two things. Honestly, they came out the traps flying in that second part, or the second, third, or whatever they were calling it the other day. I was trying to keep up with it. But they came out, and you could actually see what Ange is trying to implement. You know, see that high press to create a transition they've done that with a few of their goals the other day, which is absolutely brilliant. And you can see the young boys obviously totally bought into what Andrew's saying. And as you said, yeah, he had to sort of give him a wee bit up in the arse, I think, after that first break. But listen, it's all part of the learning process between Ange and the players and getting the system right. But what was really promising for me is there's a lot of young players there that are on show. Young Moffat was an absolute standout for me the other day. Don't know much about the lad, but he looked as if he just was playing for Celtic for a long time. Do you know what I mean? And I know it's a pre-season friendly, but he obviously knows exactly what Ange is looking for because he was chasing everything all over the park and took his goal really well as well. But no, very promising for us in the first pre-season friendlies. I said the other night, I wanted to see us in action. I wanted to see Angie's philosophies getting across and seeing how quickly the players are buying in there. But I think they're buying in there pretty quickly. And also, the boys who have been away at the Euros are all going to come back this weekend. So I think it's an exciting prospect to see us playing at the weekend as well.
Because obviously there's been a lot of talk in the last year or two about us and the youth players, why they always want to leave. And as you mentioned there, there was a lot of good youths on show. So there is guys coming through. But obviously it's just getting their chance. And
yeah,
obviously pre-season, because again, we'll touch on it as we go on the podcast about lack of players and signs and movement. These guys, this could be the best time to get into the manager's year, because if I'm not signing anybody yet, they've got maybe 2 or 3 weeks to try and get into that squad for the start of the season.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is the best opportunity for these young guys to get into Angie's plans and Angie's thoughts. Angie's coming in with a clean slate. He doesn't know any of these players when they first came in, so everyone's got a fair crack of it. But even, you know, obviously, Albion and Yeti look like a different player the other day. And I know it's only one game in the preseason, but Albion Ayeti was such a disappointment for me last season. I saw a lot of him when he played for Bale in Switzerland before he got his move. And I thought, this could be the next Gary Hooper for Celtic when he signed, because he's a similar type of player. But it was so disappointing last year. And I don't think it was all Albion's fault. I think he struggled with obviously injuries and we're trying to rush him back. I don't think the system worked for him, what Len was trying to do. See him the other day, it looked like a new signing. And that's only one pre-season game. So that is a good opportunity for Albion to impress as well after that last season. But as you said, there's a lot of young boys there. They've got a really good opportunity to try and make their way into the manager's plans for the season ahead.
Because obviously we're saying Ayeti. To be fair, the last few days I've kind of watched some videos on him and looked at him and what he'd done with Basel. And I've seen, obviously, I played up front myself, so I tend to look at forwards a bit more, just how they're moving. And well, I think his movement, even when he wasn't fit last year, his movement was superb. Mm-hmm. You can tell he's that striker's instinct. I think the game that done it for me was, I think it was a 2 weeks game against Lille. He was up front himself, and him and Elanusi really lined up well. And I know they played with Basel. You've obviously seen a bit more maybe than me and Basel. And they two lined up well with Basel. I watched a lot of his goals, and I know people say YouTube always show you the good bits and whatever else, but all his goals are going about the penalty area. They were all tap-ins and wee nifty finishes, but these days, these strikers are worth their weight in gold. Tap-ins might be easy to score, but you've got to be in the positions to score their goals. Last season, I know Edouard got 20 odd goals, but we weren't really in any positions. That's why we missed so many chances, no creating enough, and obviously didn't help. We were conceding a lot of goals. But when it goes to Ayeti, I think for me, when it comes to last season, I've kind of took it apart. Every player regressed last season. So as we said the other day, that something obviously wasn't right for just about every player to know be at their peak, because I was watching some behind the scenes with Everton the other day. I think John Joe Kenny turned up, and my dad's like, oh fuck, he wound up playing with Everton this year after being poor for us. That's just what happens to Celtic. And he was realistically, I think he was Everton's second choice, roughly, maybe on the bench right back. So how can he go for that to play with Celtic and then being absolutely dead rubber? Is it the pressure of playing with Celtic because you know that you win every week at Everton? Or for me, it's crazy how they can, like Shane Duffy as well, you're coming playing against top players week in, week out, and no disrespect to your league, some average players that are no maybe only on $2,000 a week compared to what they're on, and they're struggling. You're thinking, is it a mentality thing or is it pressure? It's weird, isn't it?
It's maybe a bit of both, Ryan. It's really hard to put your finger on it, but I completely understand fans' frustration, your frustration. I've I was frustrated with Shane Duffy as well. I thought Shane Duffy could up here and walk it. Mm-hmm. Generally did. And he was the type of centre-half we were looking for. You know, no nonsense, win the ball, get the ball out to the midfielders and creative players and let them do their stuff. It just didn't happen. The guy looked lost. He looked completely lost. It looked as if he forgot how to play the game. That's how bad it was. But, you know, as I said before, and I said in other podcasts, a lot of things are going on in people's lives and players' lives that affect. And obviously Shane came out afterwards and said there was a big effect in his personal life and things like that for, and that does affect your performance. But even going back to John Joe Kenny, you know, I saw John Joe Kenny play for Schalke in the Bundesliga and the guy was holding his own, you know, against top opposition, one of the top five leagues in Europe, and he was holding his own for Schalke, who weren't a great team, but he was actually doing well. I mean, Celtic picked him up, I went, do you know what, he'll do a job for us. That was my opinion. I said to myself at the time, he'll do a job for us. He should step to the ship at that position. And like you said again, he just struggled, and it was like he forgot how to play that position. He's probably played that position all his days. So it's really hard to make a finger about it. I think when players come into Celtic, I don't think they understand, unless you're a local boy from Glasgow or a Celtic fan or whatever, I don't think you quite understand the expectation that's on you. And I remember an interview with Virgil van Dijk said that when he signed for Celtic, that he came here and knew Celtic were a big club now, but when he was here, he realised that you have to win every single game. But he said that was one of the best lessons he got, because it made him a winner. Made him a winner, and look where he is now. You know, he had the right mentality to rise above that and become a winner. Some players out there just don't have that.
Definitely on Ayeti for me. I think he might not get his 20 goals, but I think he'll score you important goals. And I think with the way we spoke the other day, the way Ange wants to play, for me as well, if you're a striker, if you're not getting balls into the box, you're not getting chances, there's not much you can really do. Because I don't think he's got a great guy that's going to go on your channels.
No.
He might hold the ball up and like to play, but...
Yeah, he will.
But I think he needs to be involved in the game.
He's going to be, when I saw him for Bali, he reminded me a lot of Gary. And like you said, he scored a lot of goals around the box. Tap-ins, six-yard box. But those are the important goals, like you said, that you need. He's going to play these back to goal. He's going to link up the play. These players run about him to create things. But I think if Albin Ayeti does what he's meant to do, he'll score double figures, no problem this season. Absolutely no problem whatsoever. And going by his sort of first game there, it looks as if he's up for it. So that's a good sign as well.
And obviously, we're talking about kind of youth players and stuff. Young boy Liam Shaw, I thought, was a standout, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd be very comfortable in the ball, and he looks quite a big lump as well, so I don't think he'll take any nonsense. I know he's maybe only 20, 21 again. He's a young player, so coming for a big club, well, Sheffield Wednesday are a big club, let's be honest. I know they're doing League One, but they're a big club, but you're coming for a big club to a massive, massive establishment at Celtic. It's a massive industry at Celtic, so... Again, they guys wanted to come in, and obviously this is the perfect time to join in with the team and get a slow burner into pre-season. And I hope the guys, again, we'll touch on it as we go on about transfers and stuff, that maybe he might be one of the gems. But as I've said before, and you've said, no, every young player and every cheap sign is a gem. So again, you're just hoping that we get plucky and he does turn out a very good player.
Yeah, absolutely. I was quite impressed with Liam Shaw the other day as well. I think the one thing I liked about him was he's full energy and pushing on the park and creating those transitions, as Ange calls it. So that was good to see as well. But I think he'll do well. He just needs to develop in the right way. And as long as he's getting game time, I think these players need game time and whatever level. Sorry, my daughter's just chatting again. Sorry. As long as these players are getting sort of game time and progressing in the right way. Listen, they might not get into the first team. They get into the first team, great, but as long as they're getting competitive game time, they will develop further.
Because obviously, I know a lot of international players when they're playing, but Edouard came on for the last half an hour, and I thought I know it's only a pre-season game, whatever else, but for me, you can see the difference the guy brings. He was just, I thought he was effortless in what he'd done. He was bringing players into play. He was just, and again, he took his goal very well, and I know, for me, I didn't think he'd ever play with Celtic again. I thought that was him done. I know he might still go, right? But just to see him play for Celtic again, I was like, brilliant, he's a slip-on again. As much as I maybe criticise him, his attitude, if he went down south or he went abroad, that we need to work harder, we need to do more off the ball. Obviously, scoring goals is a massive thing, but when you go to these bigger clubs, you need to do more off the ball and you need to run the channels, you need to link the play. But for a half an hour ago, I thought he played really well. He looked sharp and he was kind of tracking back to help the young players, and it's something I didn't see last year. He didn't track back as much, and within half an hour, as you mentioned about Ayeti, I seen a difference in the players who were there last year. You know, they were running a bit more, and especially Ayeti in the captaincy. I know it's only a pre-season game, but that must have been a vote of confidence for him as well.
I think that would have gave him a big lift. And I was quite surprised, to be completely honest, to be here about that. I know there's a lot of young boys and things like that playing as well, but listen, that's maybe what Albion needs. You know, he needs that wee lift. I think, like you said, yeah, Eddie just came back. It looked as if he'd never been away from the game the other day, which was good. As you say, that I was kind of resigned to him going. And I think a lot of people thought he was going to Leicester, and obviously, but Leicester have moved on to other targets. So, listen, we've got him here. Hopefully, he's going to be here. I'd really like him just to stay and help us, if he can score 20-plus goals again, and help us wrestle that title back off Rangers. That would be good for us.
Because I was actually saying that, I think it was Robert the other day. I was talking about Edward and that on the phone, and I've kind of said, I know fans are saying sell him and get the £15 million, whatever that is, right? But for me, I'd rather keep him for one more season. Qualify, because let's be honest, he probably is the best player in Scotland, if I'm not out. So I would rather keep him for a season, lose that transfer fee, but knowing what you're going to get, £30 million, maybe at the end of the season. So you're going to get £15 million really for him. Really, you're getting, he's giving you the money back because he's got you into Europe. You're going to get better players in the future after him. And guys like Turnbull might sell on next year, McGregor might go. So you might get actually a better suitor by doing that. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I'm agreeing with you. I'd rather keep him and get us to that glory path of winning the league, getting us 2 or 3 years ahead by winning the league, because you're going to get the value of the Champions League money right away, guaranteed. You're going to get maybe a better sponsor, maybe a year, or I know they just had a 3 or 4 year deal. So you might get other people wanting to put shares in your club because you know they're going to have in Europe next year. So like I say to Robert and all, you know yourself, when they back your manager like we did with Rodgers, the income Rodgers got for us, I think it was like his own 90 or something.
It's massive income. The club generate more money. The better the club, the team doing the pitch, the club generate more money. And that's just a fact for every club. And Rodgers obviously had a big pool, you know, big name, prestige and things like that. But Ben Rodgers wasn't just the name we got him for. We got him to transform the team, and he did do that, and he done it very successfully. But like you said, I think that, you know, keep Eddie. As long as he wants to stay, but I think that's probably the critical thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
As long as Eddie wants to stay here and he's happy, and he'll hit his form, and I'm pretty sure he'll do well for us. Listen, if he wants to go, then I think the club will get a decision to make at that point. And as I said the other night, there's no point keeping him an unhappy player, because he'll just not get the best out of him.
And we've got a point for the live stream I mentioned for JP. He's wanting to ask you, why do you? We have spoken about it before. How slow Celtic are doing transfers and stuff. But basically, there's 2 weeks or 10 days to go till the qualifiers. Why is this process slower getting these players in? And in your opinion, why do we dilly-dally in these transfers? Why are we always, we'll get past the first qualifier, then we'll maybe look at, or we'll get past the first two, we'll wait and see. In your opinion, do you think it's the day we, is it money? Is it just no getting the targets? Or do you think it's just something that takes time?
No, it's actually a really good question, because I know a lot of Celtic fans, a lot of my friends and family included, ask the question all the time as well, so it's a good point for JP. But basically, the way it works is Celtic will have a list of targets. Now, that list of targets would have been generated from the scouting team and the recruitment team probably back in January, I would say, and they would have monitored those players over the last 6 months to both the end of the season. Now, one of the factors that's caused the problem is the fact that Lennon is no longer there. There's a change of management, but there's also a change at the higher level with the chief executive, and Peter Lowell was always involved in all the transfer dealings as well. Nicky Hammond's now gone. A lot of the recruitment team have now left. I know there is some of the recruitment team that's still there and still actively involved. But basically, Ange just came in. He's probably been hit with a list of targets. And he'll probably been sitting in whatever, Japan or whatever he's doing, his isolation. He threw the targets and tried to get these players in. I have absolutely no doubt Celtic are doing everything they can at this very moment to get players in before the Midgetland game in a couple of weeks. The factors that come into play is, one, the clubs are dealing with, obviously trying to negotiate fees and work with the clubs. That becomes quite difficult at times, especially if the player at that said club has maybe got two or three suitors that are after him. So the selling club will try and maximise that as much as they can. You've got the agent that's involved. No doubt the agent will know Celtic's interested. So what he'll be doing is he'll be on the phone to everybody else and tell them Celtic are interested in my player here, try to generate more interest for him.
And that's going to obviously blow other suitors up to come in.
Aye, exactly. And what they'll do is they'll know take the first offer from Celtic, because you never take the first offer in anything. You know, even when you get to sell your house, you go like, never take the first offer. So they'll keep things going. So this doesn't happen over a course of days and weeks. You know, this can take a month, it can take 2 months. And generally what you find is, I think especially with some of the big clubs, like Celtic, it tends to drag on a wee bit. Now, I think what Celtic tend to do is, I think Celtic have previously maybe looked at a player and held out for that player for such a long time and then went, right, we can't get him. And come August, they go, shit, we can't get the second choice and we can't get the third choice. So when they go to the fourth choice, there tends to be a loan option. So I think probably that could be done a bit better. And if you're not getting a player over the space, I thought we can say, right, cut our losses and move on to the next one. That's just my opinion. But, there's many, many factors. As I say, selling club, Celtic are a factor, the player's agent. If it's a young player, parents are generally involved as well, and they want to know they're getting the best thing for their son as well. So, there's just so many factors at play. It doesn't happen over a space of a couple of days. But I'll be honest, when I took Wright to Celtic, we started those discussions probably like the tail end of the season before. Mm-hmm. The deal done on deadline day. That was how long it took.
That's pretty a lot of time, isn't it? Considering he's playing in Scotland as well.
Yeah.
What, he's abroad or anything?
Celtic, there was. So this is probably another factor. It might be different now, but the setup at the time was, you know, you had John Park was the head scout at the time, you had Peter Lowell and you had Ronnie Dylan as the manager. You know, John Park wanted to do it. Peter wasn't so sure or whoever. I'm not saying that's a fact, but that's what it is. It's like the people who are involved at the club and ready to make a decision, maybe two of them out of four are going, oh, I'm not really sure about this player. Whereas a lot of them are going, no, we really need to do this. So that takes time. They've got to convince each other, you know, is he the right man? Is he not? Is it unanimous? Sometimes it's not unanimous, you know. But like I said, there's just so many factors involved in it that it takes so long. And honestly, with Rise, it took quite a long time to get that done. But eventually it did done, thankfully. It does take time.
And then there's talk about him maybe going to Palace or Burnley now. So,
yeah.
Again, we don't know what's going to happen. But
no.
I think now, considering he's maybe 6 months left, the chances, there's not really been any talk about him signing a new deal. So I think obviously maybe, I just need to cash in them. And obviously, best team for us go, because I know some fans have given some jip in the last year or so. But I do think, again, I feel from the last season, because he wasn't played in a position where he's a natural, he's not a winger.
No. No, we
can all see that, and that's one reason why he was tucking and hitting shots, because how can he do his job of working for a midfield and taking shots when he's out wide? So he's got to come in, and obviously because he's getting frustrated and he's hitting the ball wild, that happens in football. I've been there myself. I was a striker and I played out wide, and I used to fucking hate it, Wilma. I used to hate it. Just because I was quick, they thought you could play out wide. I'm like, no, my brain is to play up front, not to play out wide. And then he wanted to chase back, and but that's not my job. So it's the same with James Forrest. I know James Forrest is a winger, but James Forrest, for me, defensively, I don't think he does enough, because he's not a defensive winger. He's an attacking fullback. So that's why I think, hopefully, when Ange comes in now, you've got a fullback who will just be up and down, like you had with Tierney and Lustig. Lustig may have not been quick, but he always makes the time cover the ground, and it helped the guys like your Sinclairs and Roberts and Forrest as the years went by. And I think that's what we need now. We need guys to play in the positions where they're naturally positioned to play, because you know yourself, it's all right signing good players like you're there on this season, your Tumbles we did last season, but you can't just go right then go and play. They've got to find a system, a philosophy, and I think we lost that last season. I think hopefully this season we'll get that back.
I hope so. I totally agree with you. I hope so. I think we were probably overloaded as we're number 10s last year. Was just the ultimate fact. For me, Ryan Christie's a number 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a creative player that'll play in the pockets, play between the lines. And listen, I know he takes a lot of grief about his shots, and his shots weren't the best last year, but I tell you something, the boy can hit the ball. He can, and he's dangerous from outside the box. And as you said, a lot of frustration probably crept in with him as well, which is just natural. But listen, he's been a great player for Celtic. It was a privilege to take him there myself and see how well he's done and how well he's developed. It's been brilliant to see it. And as you say, you know, Ange, I'm pretty sure, will find players that fit his system. I don't think he's going to just bring players together and tell them to go out and play. Mm-hmm. They need to be doing their job individually to work well as a team. And I'm pretty sure he'll do that with the team this year.
And obviously, you see, obviously, Ryan, you know, got that deal done with Ryan. It must be a good thing for you as well, because you've obviously seen how good he is. You've got him the moving away. So, again, it's kind of you being good at your job as well. You've highlighted the player, you've got the deal done, you've highlighted the club. And again, that's obviously a partner back to yourself as well, knowing that you've got him, the move he's got, and knowing that he might go into the future. Mm-hmm. And that's all stemming for kind of your work as well. And that scout, as you say, that scouting work kind of comes into that type of play.
Yeah. Obviously, when you find players like Ryan and you see them progress on to obviously for Celtic and doing well for Celtic and then probably progressing into the Premier League, you take a wee step back and go, it was brilliant to be part of that and obviously be involved. And as you said, it gives me a bit more confidence doing the sort of scouting side of things as well. And there's been numerous players over the years that I've seen and have gone on to better careers and bigger careers, which has been great. But yeah, listen, I'm pretty sure he'll go down there and he'll do well. I've no doubt about that whatsoever. He's got the attitude and the right mentality to do it, and the ability, obviously, as well. So I'm sure he'll do well.
I think as well, I think maybe Palace and Burnley, I think he was thriving him, and it wouldn't surprise me if they get a move further up to an Everton or something.
Well, you see what happened to Andy Robertson. Do you know what I mean? Andy Robertson went down south to the Hull and he was a breath of fresh air and he got his move to Liverpool, you know. There's been numerous players over the years who went down there and done well and then moved up to a bigger club coming from the Scottish League. So, like obviously Stuart Armstrong's doing really well at Southampton now as well. And obviously Virgil van Dijk, you know what I mean? Don't really need to say much more than that. So, no, I'm pretty sure himself and if Big Ayer goes as well, then fair enough. The exact same man, he's been a good seller at the club. I'm pretty sure he'll do well down there.
I've got another question as well for Perry. He's asked, kind of which your kind of oversight is like a transfer process and what's the need to get a deal completed? Who's involved? Is it more to do with the clubs and as the agent, or who's involved in the full kind of process of getting deals done?
There's quite a lot of people involved nowadays, so it really stems from an agent point of view. You would have a player and you'll try and target clubs that you think that player can go to. So say for instance you've got a player that's playing Championship in Scotland, you want them to a Premier League team, so you would try and speak to the recruitment teams at those clubs in the Premier League, find out if he's on the radar first and foremost, and obviously try and speak to the powers that be at those clubs, the guys that are going to make the decisions. Obviously a big part of it is their analysis. So one of the big things I was getting involved in and what I was spending more time on as an agent was trying to look at data analysis and look at your clients and look at what they're doing in terms of, are they influencing the game, are they scoring goals, are they creating chances, are they covering the pitch, are they how many kilometres they're running in a game, because then that's good ammunition for you for a sales pitch almost. You can turn and say, well look, he's covering more ground than what your number 8 is doing now at your own team, so he's a better player than him, etc. You used to try and use that to your advantage, but listen, the recruitment teams at these clubs are already doing that. Generally, your player tends to be on a list or on the radar at least anyway for a chance for the deal to be done. But anyway, once it gets through that stage, the recruitment team do their nitty-gritty. They'll pass that on to whoever, if it's head of recruitment, the manager, form director, technical director, whoever it is. And they'll basically start, they'll speak to yourself, try and ascertain the interest, if your client's interested in going there. And that's how the discussions basically get going. And then from that, they'll try and deal with the club to get a fee arranged. Basically, they'll speak to whoever the club is, sport director of the club or whatever, try and get the deal done between the two clubs. And then once, to be honest, when it's a club like Celtic coming for their players, it's pretty straightforward from the personal terms sort of agreement. Of course, you know, Celtic try to look after themselves and we're trying to look after ourselves as well as the player. So there's obviously a bit of negotiation goes on, but as I said, dealing with Celtic was actually pretty straightforward when you were dealing with them. The time it took was that longer was between the two clubs, you know, clubs trying to get the best fee for the player and stuff like that as well. But once you're over that hurdle, you get the deal done, once basically they'll do the medical and stuff like that, make sure the player's up to shape and do all the blood tests and whatever they do. But that's a day. People don't realise that. That's a day. That takes hours. You know, Celtic's case, they'll send somebody to Ross Hall and they're there. The player will be there 6-7 hours. Easy. When Ryan done his deal, we were there the day before deadline day. That day, and they didn't get all the stuff finished, so we had to go back in the morning, had to go and do a blood test. And the blood test results hadn't even come through, and basically, I was just going to hold things up, and everything gets sorted, and it was fine. But people don't realise that takes a long time, the medical process, which clubs have got to do. Clubs have got to protect themselves. There's been horror stories over the years, especially on the other side of the city, seeing a couple of players who wouldn't have passed the medical and stuff like that, and obviously signed them, but it cost them a lot of money. So the clubs have got to do that. After that, it's pretty much plain sailing. You're back into the club. Player goes and does all the media stuff, sign the deal, done, and then everybody walks away happy.
Is that something I've kind of been watching a bit more of on YouTube and stuff, and I'm interested in how deals are done, how medicals are done, what they do the first day of pre-season, all that type of stuff. And I've been watching it a few times recently. Players, I watched the one with Billy Gilmore signed, the guy Angus Gunn signed.
Uh-huh.
They two went to Norwich, and it showed you him doing bits of a medical. Like, he was like, even the wee simple things with the goalkeeper, that he was making sure his knuckles are all right and ankles.
Oh,
and he was there for, I think, was just at the training for like 6 hours. And for me, it's mental how, like I said before we came on, some fans don't realise what goes on behind the scenes. Obviously, I know more because I spoke to you, and I've been up kind of pro youth myself, so I know what gets behind the scenes with stuff and speak to people, and some fans don't get that knowledge, and I think they just turned up, they sign a contract, they do a medical, and that's
Aye.
It.
Maybe these things
take a while.
You do, Ryan. It's not like back in the 80s, you know, sign a bit of paper and that's you're a player. The medical process is very thorough for a reason, to protect the clubs. There's so much money on the line that, you know, players sign a 4-year contract. Some players are signing 4-year contracts to millionaires. That's just a fact. Signing contracts, a lot of money. Clubs need to protect themselves, so they spend a lot of money with places like Ross Hall and all these other places they go to, doctors and whatever. So they're giving that player a thorough examination. I'm talking MRI scans, everything, you name it, they get it. A full body scan for everything. Blood test, you name it, they get everything done, and it can take a couple of days. Some occasions it takes a couple of days for whatever reason. Something might come up on the scan, you know, MRI scan, oh, what's that? Maybe need another opinion, you know, bring in this orthopaedic surgeon, he needs to look at it. No, everything's fine, don't worry about it. It's good. You know what I mean? People don't realise that. So it's definitely a long, I don't say drawn out process, it's a long process to get something done. It's a really difficult process and a complicated process, just because of the amount of factors that are involved in it. And everything's moving and changing all the time. As I said, when we spoke to Celtic about Ryan at the time, and there was a bit of hesitant about it, and should we do it now, and should we leave it till later? And, you know, they hadn't really made their mind up.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time. We all different people. There's just so many people involved. Do you know what I mean? And as I said, there's just so many facts involved, and that's why it takes such a long time.
You see, obviously, what you were mentioning, but obviously there's a lot of money involved now in football transfers and stuff. That's why, for me, I think as well, the reason why these bigger teams are doing these long medicals, because same as Celtic, I know maybe £2 million to Celtic is a lot of money, so they need to make sure that player's obviously fairly fit to come in and train right away, and he's obviously previous injuries. And obviously, to what happened to Ericsson, clubs don't need to know if that's...
Well, maybe exactly, something that's the best example.
That meant they need to know if I could have a faulty heart, I could have a faulty back, anything. Because let's be honest, it's maybe become more apparent now that these things are coming up. And again, is that maybe because these players are far too fit? I don't know what the cause is. Is it just a freak of nature these things happen? I don't know. But it's really critical. It's critical that these clubs do these things. Because again, it's these things like that could take 2 days. As you say, blood tests don't arrive to 2-3 days later. And I think it's interesting for me as well, because a lot of fans don't actually know what goes behind the scenes. They just think they're paying £600, they're watching the team, and that's it. And they're not performing. Well, that's fucking shite. Why are they not playing well? And as you said before, there's a lot of factors that make you play well. It's obviously your outside lead, because me and Robert spoke to... I keep getting back to it, because it was a real interesting interview with Sam Wardrobe. He's currently Merdy now, and he does a lot of things, and about nutrition and whatever else. And he was even saying, he says, people don't realise, I think the thing we spoke about with Shane Duffy, people don't realise how much, if you're performing on the park's not very good, it might not be because you're not performing well, it could be your outside. He says, that morning, that game, you could have an argument with your missus and it sets you off for the rest of the day. He says, it's wee simple things. And he says, fans sometimes need to take a step back and realise that because he plays one bad game, it does mean he's a bad player. If you've had a bad week training, he says, most of the time you've a bad beat game, that game, because you've not prepared properly. He says, so these players need to be, for me, I agree with him. That's why these players are paid a lot of money, because they need to, as soon as they wake up, they need to be an athlete to go to bed. They need to perform every day in training to the Saturday. And I was the same when I played, even the amateur 21s. If I didn't eat well that week, or I had a bad training session or a bad day, I know for a fact that weekend I struggle. It's all about mentality, and I think some fans need to take a step back and realise that sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously, you've obviously spoke to young Sam, and Sam would give you a really good perspective of what it's like being a player. And I've seen it myself, and players don't switch off, mate. They don't switch off. It's 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. They are on it, and they've got to be on it. If they're not on it, they're not performing. I remember listening to Kevin Phillips after he retired, and he was in an interview, and he actually said, they said to him, you know, what's the good thing? And obviously, he's like, I miss playing football and all the usual stuff. Of course, he's going to miss it. But he played quite long in his career. But they said, what's the thing you really look forward to after retirement? He said, Spending Christmas with my family. He said, I've not spent a Christmas day with my family since he's been playing, because he's either in the hotel, at the training ground. People don't realise the sacrifices the players make to get to that level. Now, I know 100%, you know, players get paid a lot of money. It's a massive amount of money they get paid per week. A lot of people probably don't have any sympathy for them. But what I'm saying is, you know, most people can go out of bed on a Monday morning and go home on a Friday, and they're finished their work and go and enjoy the weekend. These guys don't. It's 7 days a week. It's constant. As you said, the slightest wee thing can set them off and affects their performance. The next minute, they're getting 40,000 people giving them a hard time. Mm-hmm. What's that going to do to them? It's just going to make them feel worse. And that's why mental health is a big thing now in football. And I think people have beginning to understand the impact of mental health. And a lot of players have come out recently and spoke about it. Stephen Cocker was one that I was listening to quite a lot.
I watched that interview. It was good, wasn't it?
It was really good. Really, really. And it was a really good insight. Because that guy had everything. Everybody thought from the outside looking in, that guy had everything. You know, he was going to play for England, he was playing for Tottenham at the time. He said to go away and he said to, you know, deal with his problems and face his problems. Look where the guy is now. The guy just signed for Fenerbahce.
I've seen that, aye.
Fenerbahce just signed for, you know, he's not. He was getting slaughtered at one point, you know, like, oh, he's shite, he's passed
it. He went to Dundee, didn't he?
He was at Dundee. I think that was partly when he was getting some help and dealing with things and stuff like that. I came up to Dundee, and I think he actually done all right at Dundee, to be fair.
Was it not before he went to Dundee that Rodgers tried to get him, or was it when he was at Dundee?
There was talk of that, that's right. I remember, no, I think it might have just before. I remember there was talk about that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Brendan knew the talent the guy had, and obviously knew the type of player he was, and he would have fitted in well if that was the case. But, you know, there's a guy that's been knocked down so hard, and look where he is now. But that's what I'm saying. Players at that level, mate, have got such great mental strength, mm-hmm. mental ability to deal with those problems. And don't get me wrong, people just need to remember, you know, they're only human. These guys are only human at the end of the day. But what they do day in, day out, listen, that's why they're paid the money, because they do not switch off.
And that's probably one reason why they make it at that level.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why I'm interested in getting guys like yourself on here, but guys who have played at the top level or managed or have worked at the highest level, because I want to know how you get to that. Like, how you can, obviously social media now is a massive thing, and if I was ever a professional, I would have something to do with that. I wouldn't even look at it, because I just think it's a scary place sometimes. It's very positive when I can't remember who it was an interview with somebody I watched a while ago. I can't mind, it was somebody down south or something, and he says, when you score a goal or you play well, you're the best thing since sliced bread. You can all the praise, but as soon as you make one bad pass, it's this guy's fucking shite, get him binned, get him sacked. And he says, that's when some football players can't switch off, and they want to reply, and they go, I can't reply. And that's why a lot of these I think that guys like Ncham, Laura, I think they've got people doing that for them now. Because that must be hard. It must be hard because not just that, your phone must be ping, ping, ping all the time.
Constantly. I know. It's probably one of the things that I wouldn't be taking on. It's probably, to be honest, I find that distraction even in my life just now, and I'm not an elite football player, do you know what I mean? You're spending that much time on your phone nowadays, it's shocking. But yeah, I think that does affect people. And I think that's really been spoken about recently, you know, online, you know, trolling and things like that. We're just not, we're just people in general. But yeah, I'm sure players take a lot of grief from that side of things. And if I was advising the players, I would just be saying, look, we should be with it, you know, because it's just going to knock you down. Because like you said, one mistake you make, you know, this goalkeeper could be saving everything. He makes one mistake, puts it in the back of the net, and all of a sudden he's a villain. Do you know what I mean? That's just the way football is, unfortunately, with some people.
But that's the thing as well with Barkey, Big Barkey, should we call him?
Barkey, is that the new name?
He got slaughtered last year, and I think when you actually look at his stats, I think he got out his most of the games and clean sheets, I think. He didn't do that bad. And because, obviously, it was a Champions League game, but he didn't really cover himself in glory. But again, I sympathise in a way because people don't realise how much spending time with your family or spending time with your teammates, going for a coffee, going for a night out, that's a big thing in football, team bonding and whatever else. And last year, because of obviously the restrictions and stuff like that, players were saying they were in change rooms with two, three guys and you can't really gel as a team. And again, I still say that that would have affected Celtic last year because you've got a lot of foreign guys come in, they can't mingle, they can't go for coffees, for lunches.
Probably don't even speak the language or whatever.
Exactly. And that's what I keep saying. He's came from my opinion, AK Athens, who are a decent team. They always do okay in Europe, something to get further. He played well. I can mind I watched him against us and he played okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's played against me and my dad by Munich and some of the saves he was making, he was commanding, he was shouting and balling. I just personally think it's confidence. You don't send a goal, in my opinion, for £5 million if you don't rate him. Because for Celtic, you know yourself, when does Celtic pay big, big money for a goalkeeper? Very rarely.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
So they must have, and obviously you know yourself, or I don't know if you know Stevie Woods personally, Stevie Woods is a very good, from what I've heard, he's very, very highly rated.
I don't think
he would be signing off somebody who he thought wasn't up to standard to come play with Celtic. No. So
I think you're right. I think it was probably difficult for him to move to a foreign country, especially with the COVID restrictions. I think that was difficult for a lot of people. I touched on it the other night. I remember Dylan Petrov got talks of abuse when John Barnes had him. But I remember we signed him from CSK Sofia and he couldn't speak a word English. I think he was only 19 or something when we signed him. But once he started adapting to the Scottish lifestyle and the language, and look at the player that guy became. He was incredible for Celtic. He was one of my favourite players at Celtic, I remember growing up. And I'm not saying Barkas has got to be the next sort of Stillian or the goalkeeper equivalent of Stillian Petrov. But what I'm saying is, you know, this is going to be a very big season for Barkas this year. I think that Ange will give him his chance. I really do. I think you can see that from the training park calling them, but maybe calling them Barkies, nicknamed them already, so he's going to stay around. I think he's going to get his chance this year. And I just really, really hope that he's the player that we all believe that he can.
And then obviously we're talking about kind of transfers. Again, rumours about Bio again going today. And I think I spoke to you about it personally today. That for me, again, it's mere money.
Nice.
Yeah, Scott.
Cheerio, mate.
I think for me, it was very, again, it's mere money spunked in a way. It's another project we've signed. I know the guy didn't really get a chance.
What did we sign him for?
I think it was £1.5-2 million was it Slovakia or Slovenia?
Was it Slovakia?
And I think he's supposedly very, very good in the air. And I know he played, done okay with Toulouse. I think there's a guy last season. I think he was a top goal scorer in the League Two. And I think he beat Leon for a good bit of money. So
uh-huh.
I think that is a good bit of talent because I'm sure Giroud came for, didn't he? With Toulouse. Was that League Two? No, or was it League One?
Giroud.
Aye.
He came from Montpellier.
Montpellier, that was.
And I think it might have been League Two at the time. I think he came from some sort of league there,
but again, he's not a chance. He'll end in a game of sniff. Again, the bits I've seen him, I know he didn't really look too great, but that's the thing I'm trying to get across. It was a good point for Robert, that Robert made the other day. He put in his Twitter basically saying we've had £11 million for Frimpong. Fiona Grant, Hamid, money for other guys, blah, blah. And then we've only signed two young projects for $300,000, $600,000. And you're thinking, how you expect to move on to a club when you're not recruiting that money? Especially as we've said before, the season books are going to fly off, which they have flied off again, even though we've had a poor season.
Yeah.
The strips are going to fly off this year because they look great. The training kit, I bought the mint t-shirt today because it's beautiful. It's just, they're going to fly off a shelf. So there's money going to obviously want to cup, and obviously the new manager, it's excitement. It's just one of the ones. For me, like we said the other day, it's already having two or three projects. You can manage them, develop them, and maybe sell them on if they do well. But for me, especially coming up for qualifiers, I think we need to change the model personally. I say it, me and Robert and B spoke about it, and Mulda spoke about it as well, that we spoke about it just about the end of August, around about September. And this is before even the league was finished. We say that we need to change the model now. We said Neil Lennon had to go. The model's got to change because it's not working. We've seen it, how the car crash was going to happen, and it happened. And for me, the model's got to change. And if that means that Kennedy's starting to go as well, I think for me, they do need to go. Again, people have got their opinions on that. I think we've got to strip back the full model, how we sign projects, the way we do our backroom staff, and I don't know what your opinion on it is, William, but I think for me, the club just needs, I'm not saying a total rebuild, but there's a lot of implications that need to be kind of recognised, I think, changed. But will it happen? I don't know.
It'd be interesting to know what the model actually is right now. I think there's a lot of questions at the minute from fans, including myself. Like, I would like to know what the model is at the minute. What's the philosophy? Is it the same philosophy we had, you know, bringing players in cheap, selling them on for more money, you know, Victor Wanyama and Joe Ledley's and Gary Hoopers and whoever. And it's a long time ago now when you think about it. It'd be good to know what the model is. For me, we spoke about this before, you know, the Red Bull model is one of the probably most revered model because it's been very, very successful in the way that they do things, and older clubs adopt it from Ralph Rangnick. I'm not saying it needs to be that model, but there's got to be an identity. Now, I think, on the other hand, I believe that Ange will give us an identity. I think the way he plays football will be very good for us, and I think that will be form part of the model. But it'd be good to know from the sort of recruitment side of things how they're doing it. But at the minute, I don't know enough about it, what's going on at Celtic Park just now or anything like that. I'm only really just like everyone else, sort of looking from the outside in, but sort of trying to read between the lines. I think Ange has got a big, big part on the transfers, which, as I said, is a good thing the other night, because he'll know the exact type of player that he's looking for to fit within his specific system and the way they want to play. So, yeah, as I said, it'd be good to know what the model is. Maybe we're going to find out over the next 6 months, Ryan, what that model will be, and we maybe just need to let things play out. But I saw Robert's tweet the other night, and it was actually a really good point that, you know, we're bringing all this money in. What are we doing, man? Where is it going? I'd like to think that they're out there trying to spend it at the minute, and it's just the usual. It just takes long. It just takes time to try and get things over the line. So, listen, let's watch and see what happens over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, over the next week or so, we'll maybe see a couple of new faces. I'd like to think we would before the Champions League qualifier. But if not, over the next sort of 2-3 weeks, then we'll see.
Definitely. I will touch on the qualifiers again, but I've got a question for JP.
Yeah, sure.
Quite a good response, William, for your insight. So,
brilliant.
He asked, do you actually know who recruits the players at Celtic, or is it a collective? Is it mainly... Obviously, I know there's a head of recruitment, which I've not got to know, but I know normally the recruitment... I know because there's always players scouting players. I know that happens because
No
matter who's involved, there's always a revolving door.
There is. Obviously, Nick Hammond was there as part of the recruitment team. Peter Lowell was a major part of that as well. Nick Hammond had his scouting team, recruitment team below that. So they would have been out there doing all the homework. Celtic will get scouts everywhere, like all over the world, and they'll be scouting constantly. There's people back at Lennox Town that we do all the data analysis, all the recruitment analysis, and they'll be sitting, going through the nitty-gritty and identifying players using the metrics. But they don't just solely, clubs don't solely rely on all the data. They've got to take the data and put it in with all the subjective scouting, the traditional scouting, so to speak, with the guys on the ground, guys going to the games, writing reports, combine the two together to then keep up with a hit list. So I've got no doubt that's happening or happened before. The thing is, just now, it looks to me, and I might, JP, I might be completely wrong here, mate, but It looks to me as if Don McKay and Ange took control of that situation. They'll be the guys making decisions with the input from the recruitment team that's still there. I don't know who's personally still there at the minute or who's left, but I'm pretty sure they've got analysts there who are feeding information to Ange and Don to help them sort of make the decisions that are required.
Because as we spoke before we came on about Don McKay, William, that I did like the way he spoke and obviously what he's done before, and you're obviously, I've liked the kind of content from him, what I've seen, and
yeah,
for me, again, we don't actually know if, as Lawwell, I know Lawwell will be some sort of part, because I know because he's part of the SFA type of thing, I'm sure he's going to be part of a club, is that right?
I think he's a member of the European Club Association.
So he's going to be part of something, isn't he? Is that right?
So he's the delegate for Celtic, so to speak. So he'll be dealing with that aspect of it. So
he'll still be involved in something, probably.
Yeah, so he'll be involved in the sort of European Club Association, which deals with matters, and all the European clubs get together as a committee and obviously deal with whatever comes on the agenda. A lot of people I know, a lot of my friends believe that Peter's still getting input with the transfers. I'll be completely honest, I generally don't think he does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Don McKay, I don't know Don McKay from Adam, don't know the guy. I like the guy from what I'm hearing and seeing, the engagement he's had of late. He spoke really well. But Don McKay isn't successful in the sort of sport business world or the corporate business world, the way you want to look at it, by not being his own man. And I believe he is his own man. And I believe Ange is the guy he wanted from day. Almost, I don't know whether it was him or Eddie Hill or whatever, but I think when he got Ange, when he spoke, he was telling us, you know, I'm really excited about this. I believed him. I genuinely believe that he was generally excited, but he got his man. So, yeah, Peter will still be there at the club. I believe Peter Lawwell was a shareholder at Celtic, so he'll still have something interest in the club as well. But listen, it's a new regime from top to bottom. Don McKay is going to be the man taking charge of that. And listen, I'm sure he'll look after his thing.
Because obviously, again, you're talking about deals and stuff. There's talk about obviously Ben Davis and Cameron Carter-Vicks and also the guy Cal Starfelt. These three rumours to come in, and suppose the guy for the Swedish guy, he's might be close.
All centre-halves, by the way, innit? Those three you mentioned are all centre-halves.
Obviously me, but there's been a wee bit of thing about the Ben Davis story. I think Steve McGinn reported it the day, basically, if people were saying, oh, he's knocked his back, fuck him, don't want him here, blah, blah, and I'm thinking, listen, take a step back, right? We all love Celtic, right? But see if you've had maybe, I don't know the deal, I don't know what it was going to get, just say he's going to offer 15 grand a week, right, at Celtic,
yeah,
to come in January, right? He's probably looking as well. What am I going to do at Celtic for the next 6 months? Am I going to win the league? Maybe no. I might get a cup. Maybe the Scottish Cup was still involved. So, if that was still involved, I don't know if it was. So, he's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to improve for 6 months? Or do I go to Liverpool? I can maybe still win the league. I can still get a bit of money, which again, we all know, as we've said, money talks in football these days.
Yeah, it does.
And obviously, he's went, I'm only 25, I might never get this move again.
Yeah.
We love Celtic, mate. Celtic's the be-all and end-all, but when Liverpool come calling, he's probably thought Van Dijk's injured, Matip's injured, I might get a chance.
Exactly.
It's no worked out, so, but I'm spinning it round and going, wait a minute, right? He plays a Liverpool now, right? I don't know if you might get him on loan. If you can get a chance to get a guy who's still playing with their players at Liverpool to come in and maybe come for a season, bolster your squad to come to try and win the league back,
mm-hmm,
I would take it. I don't care if he's not wanting to come in the past. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
If Ange wants him and Ange likes him and he's going to come, then let him come. And at the end of the day, it's only a loan deal, so you're kind of taking the lesser gamble with signing him as a free transfer, because you need to give him a sign-on fee. You need to give him wages, probably male wages, because I guess the Liverpool might even pay half the wages. I don't know the deal, but I would, Ben Davis is a guy that Ange wants, I'll happily take him, because as you say, Ayer might go. No, he probably is going to go. Stephen Welsh on me, still touch and go, he's still development. I don't know if he's going to play every week, especially if we want to qualify for Europe, but as Mr. Lawwell says, we want to compete at the highest level. Is Stephen Welsh going to meet you that level yet? Maybe no. So, whether a guy like Stephen Davis or the Swedish guy come in, I'd rather spend £12 million in three very decent centre-backs because we're going to get probably £15 million prior. Yeah. So you might actually get the money for the players and no need to spend a penny. So if that is what we're going to do, which listen, it's Celtic, we know we might not get the freedom, right? It's just all paper talk and whatever else. But for me, I would take Davis because he's played at a decent level. Pressing fans didn't want him to leave. He's playing at a decent level. Liverpool, he's maybe not played a lot at all, but he's still playing with better players than is it maybe at Celtic. So for me, it's a no-brainer, my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Well, for the Ben Davis, I didn't know that until we were speaking about it before we came on. I didn't know that story had sort of been broke by, was it Steve McGowan at the Daily Mail, was it? Steve is generally on the ball, to be fair. So the Ben Davis thing for me is, if we rewind back to January and say, Ben Davis, if I was Ben Davis's agent at the time, I'd be saying, look, we've got an offer here for Celtic, we've got an offer here for Liverpool. You've got to put yourself in the player's shoes here, right, and say to yourself, well, okay, I can go to Celtic. If it becomes successful, I might get a move to Southampton, Crystal Palace or Burnley. Get a move to Liverpool and it's successful. Okay, but where is that going to take me? And I'm not even talking, Ryan, not even in a money perspective right now, it's just a footballing sense. Playing Champions League football, winning Champions Leagues at Liverpool, you could potentially be winning there and doing. So I think he's thought himself, well, instead of me going to Celtic and going to this club and going to that club and then maybe getting to Liverpool or maybe jump three steps and go to Liverpool and take my chance, there was obviously a slim chance of him being a success there because of the players that have already got to that club. But he's obviously looked at it and says, Van Dijk's injured, Matip's injured, Henderson picked up an injury, I've got a chance of playing here. Yeah. Now, it wasn't to be for whatever reason. If the guy's available and Ange wants him and he fits with the way he's wanting to play, I've got no qualms about bringing the guy in. Right, the guy made a decision. No, in life, people make decisions and they're not always the right decision. But you kind of just hold that against them for the rest of their life. Do you know what I mean? People go like, right, shit, I made an arse of this. I'll move on and do something else or whatever. So I think we need to cut the guy a wee bit of slack. People are on his case out there. And I completely understand, because I'm a Celtic fan and I can understand, you know, there's no other club better than Celtic in my eyes. But you've got to look at this sort of objectively and say, you know, the guy's made the decision based on the facts there. Do you know what I mean? Liverpool are in a better football position than Celtic are right now. That's just a fact. So if it does come, great, that'd be brilliant. The boy, Carl Starfelt, the Swedish boy, ticks a lot of boxes for me. I know a little bit about him. Mm-hmm. He's obviously a little bit older, a bit more experienced. Done really well for Rubin Kazan over in Russia, which is a fucking very, very hard league out there. Physical league, aggressive league, the Russian Premier League.
And it's fucking Baltic.
And, well, funnily enough, I think Kazan isn't. I think Kazan's one of the warmer places in Russia. But it's fucking Russia, isn't it? It's just fucking mental out there. So you've got to be a hard, mentally guy, a hard, mentally strong person to go out there and play. And he's been very successful out there. And Rubin Kazan aren't one of the biggest teams. They're a decent side, but not one of the biggest teams in Russia. So he's done really well for me. He ticks a lot of boxes for me. Cameron Carter-Vickers, I know quite a bit about him. Obviously spent a lot of time at Tottenham over the years. And I think he was on loan at Bournemouth
last year.
He played about 20-odd games last year. I think he done okay in the Championship. Mm-hmm. Obviously, again, he's a wee bit more on the younger side, early sort of 20s. But I've no doubt that guy's got ability. And I think he'd be brilliant for Celtic. And he could be one that you'd look at and say, you know, let him come up here, spend 2 or 3 seasons, and then move them on and make a bit of money from it. I've got no doubt about that whatsoever. But we're being linked to the right people, Ryan. I think now, I think you can see the recruitment side of things is working. I know it's took a lot of criticism over the last few years, but I think that's been down to just us not getting the guys we want. You know, we've kind of fell down the pecking order and picked out players that we had to get because we had to sign somebody. I think it's been a bit of that, obviously. As you said, these players that were bringing in really bad players, they sort of regressed a wee bit last year as well. So, as I said, we're being linked to the right people. I think right now, those three players, I think, are very good players and they would do well for Celtic. As I said, I think Starfelt would be the guy that I would like first because he's got that experience about him. He's a physical player as well. So, I think that's someone we need there at the defence for it. Thank you.
And obviously, we're talking about models and whatever else. The guy, I think he's 26, so he kind of fits a model of maybe selling on. He's a Swedish internationalist. If he plays with Celtic, you'll probably maybe play with Sweden more when he plays with Celtic because he's, again, Celtic, Rubin Kazan, you're maybe more noticed to play with Celtic. You might be Rubin Kazan because you're over the side of the world. And 26, say it, but I think they're talking £4 million, which is, I would say, is a decent price for centre back. Julian was £7 million. I would say you can maybe play with him. Again, you're saying 2-3 years down the line, he might go for £15 million. That's maybe the way, that's the way I see us working. But if you're sending guys at 18, they need to maybe wait 4 years for them to maybe get to the sell on clause or try and get you a sell on kind of type of player. So for me, I don't know much about him. You're better knowledge than me, but I just know that he's played it, as you said, in Russia. I've always said the thing I liked about Russia was in the game went to Russia and he played for 4 or 5 years there. And the fact that he'd done well there, again, it proves how good he was. So, as you say, you've got to be mentally tough to play there because, let's be honest, he's probably maybe staying there himself. He might not have a misses. He might be at himself isolated. So, it's, you know, he's obviously got a mental toughness to play there, as you say, because we all know Russia's a hard place to go and play a football.
Definitely. And I think that the Celtic recruitment team would have put that on as one of the pluses for him to go out there. And he's like, listen, I'm pretty sure, because he played with IFK Gothenburg, and I'm sure Celtic would scout out in Sweden and Norway and all these places. But I think the fear factor is they snap the players directly from those countries, pick them and bring them over. There's always a fear that they might just shrivel themselves, you know, come over. And as well, Celtic kid, I need people coming in and hitting the ground running. You know, we need performance straight away. You know, remember, I used to watch Celtic players on their debut and you'd expect them to have the game of their life. Do you know what I mean? On their debuts, and when we were younger, you'd go, ah. And if they didn't have a good game these days, we'd go, he's fucking shite. Do you know what I mean? That's the sort of mentality. But there's always a fear factor, I think, when you try and bring Scandinavian players or players from Eastern Europe who are really young and they don't quite adapt quite as quickly. This guy's been out to Russia and he's developed very, very well. He's got that mental toughness and he's performing well. That's the key thing. So he ticks a lot of boxes for me. So I did see it was Fabrizio Romano put that story out, and generally Fab's
he's normally bang on
these sources. So that's why I've sort of retweeted it quite quick. As soon as he's saying something, you know something's happening behind the scenes. So fingers crossed they can get that done as soon as me.
Obviously, it's a wee thing with JP again. He's asked, do you think as well it's good that they're maybe going for the right type of players to fit the system that we maybe want to play?
Absolutely. That's got to happen. That's whatever club you're at, whoever the manager is, you need the recruitment team and the manager working, you know, in sync. And that's got to happen. And that's why models like the Red Bull model and like Monaco are doing their own model now as well. They're bringing players in with a philosophy, bringing managers in that match that philosophy now. So Celtic need that identity and just try to build that identity here. And it's good to see that they are going for the right type of people now because that's just got to happen now.
And obviously, as we mentioned, the Champions League, again, no really too much to go now the first game. And again, hopefully, there's some fans in as well because that
will be at home first game, right? I'll at home, right? Okay.
And I'm sure, I don't quote me on it, but I'm sure that is a away goal strap this year.
Yes, so there's no away goals.
So that's, for me, it's a benefit because you don't really like away from home. I'm not very good. So if it's 2-0 away, at least you know you've got a chance to score two goals at home and knowing that it's not going to affect you, you know what I mean? So
there's got to be a lot more extra time penalties in these cup competitions this year, which is probably what UEFA want for a bit of excitement. So, listen, we're at home first. Yeah, as you said, I did read 2,000 fans are getting in for one of the friendlies.
See, that's, again, I just don't know. There was 15,000 at Hampden or something, and how can it all be 2,000 at Parkhead? 60,000
seats. Why is that? It doesn't make any sense.
It's crazy. I think there was rugby games at Murrayfield with 15,000. So how can it all be 2,000 at Parkhead for Stanley? It's crazy.
I thought there was a zero missing when they put it out. I thought it was 20,000, but no, it's 2,000. That was pretty. Obviously, look at Wembley the other night. Do you know what I mean?
And then for the final, it's something going to be 90,000.
It's got to be a full house. I know
so
that.
How can there not be a full crowd at Celtic Park? It doesn't matter about countries. If there's a virus about, if there's a cold about, whatever it's about, it's the same thing. So how did they judge how many? Is it because it's Celtic?
I don't know.
Or is it because it's like Rangers? They're playing Real Madrid. How many are going to get in there?
I think you could start a new podcast, mate, if you wanted to talk in depth for that one. You could get away off on a tangent with the COVID thing, couldn't you? I was quite surprised when I read that myself. But look, it's better than having none. That's just the way I'm sort of looking at it. It's a step in the right direction. So hopefully, maybe there's 2,000 when we play, I think Preston is it, we're playing. Hopefully, they'll maybe give more info when we play Midgetland. listen, I don't know what to expect from the Midland game, but what I will say is I'm positive from what Ange has been saying, and obviously the Sheffield Wednesday game. Let's see how we do against Charlton, I think we're playing tomorrow. Let's see how we do in that. Again, it's just trying to build up, you know, build up some energy levels and fitness levels for the season ahead, and obviously getting his point across. But I don't know what to do. Listen, for me, anything in the Champions League is a bonus this year, I think. I just think it's a bonus because it's such a hard route that we've got. You know, the three teams we could have been up against, we've got the easiest draw, but even Midland are a hard team to play. So, listen, we'll see how it goes.
I've just actually owned Celtic's just posting on Twitter there. Bio's away to Ghent.
Ghent? Is that a sign for it?
It just says a permanent deal. It just says good luck, permanent deal. KAA Ghent. So
aye, right,
that's
okay.
Another one out the door, I suppose. Well, so
that's a positive, I think. I think Bio wasn't going to play much. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's not worked out. The project hasn't worked. We've cut the losses. We'll get a bit of money for them. Let's reinvest it in the guys that we really want. So hopefully we can do that now going forward. And that clears the decks. The other one, you mentioned the other guy, Chev. Is Chev still there? Or
I seen a thing, an article yesterday or the other day, that their team was on loan to. Is it Austin Tudd or something? They want to sign him, but I think he says right. The deal's a way off of Celtic. And I was like, I can mind that game he scored, and I was like, he looks a player.
Qualifier,
and I think he played for one of the very average teams in, was it Ukraine? And I think he was our top goal scorer or something.
Yeah,
he'd done very well. So, and I do believe what my old man says. There's talent everywhere. You just need to obviously play them. And the guy, COVID again with him as well. He's came to Celtic and all. Doesn't know the language very well. All these things come to impact, and I would like to give him a chance because we are very down on wires. And as I say the other day, I don't think Michael Johnson's got to take us to the next level. He is a very talented player, but to play every week for Celtic consistently, I don't know. I don't think he will, in my opinion.
I'd just like him to stay fit.
And that's a big thing doing it. If you're not fit, you can't consistently play football.
I'd love to see, like, I think Michael Johnson's got great ability, great talent, you know, about him. And so frustrating. And listen, I have no doubt it's so frustrating for him picking up injury after injury. But I'd like to see him have a full season.
Mm-hmm.
Just a full, I don't know, 25 games, 20 games, and see how he does, and then judge him. Because right now, you know, he plays two or three games and then he's injured again. He's not really getting a good run, you know, he's not really getting a bit of consistency about him. So I have no doubt he'll find that frustrating as well. But listen, I'm sure he's going to be here. I hope he stays fit. It'd be great to see him even get 15 games this year, 15 starts this year. It would be great to see and see how he develops from that. Because I'm sure I actually believe there's a player with Mikey Johnson. He just needs that run of games.
And obviously you mentioned Charlton. A few international players are back now. So guys like McGregor might get a sniff, some minutes, because I think, I don't know if he might use the Morris game as a game maybe put his team for next week or the week before, because again it's a very short turnaround. I think as well, as we play Midtjylland, I think we're playing somebody else 3 or 4 days later as well. I think the games are starting to come quick and fast now. So, and I think McGregor did say, he says fitness for me is not really an issue. He says I've only had 2 weeks off, three weeks, you don't really lose a lot of fitness in that type.
And he'll be doing stuff as well. He'll be sat on the couch for 2 weeks. Do you know what I mean? These guys are given plans to go away. As I said before, 365-day a year job, the football industry, football players. So he'll no switch off. I think he'll find his feet after a couple of sessions. He'll be back running again. I don't know how he'll play again tomorrow. I think it's probably more get his point across again, get the system in play. I think a lot of young boys will still play because I think they've done well for him so far. And I think they're buying into what he's trying to do. But it'd be good to see Lionel Turnbull coming back, McGregor coming back, Greg Taylor's coming back as well. So, we'll watch with interest tomorrow.
And even talking about left-backs, Ball and Golly, another chance for him. And a lot of fans have criticised him because, obviously, they went a bit holiday. That was a back burner right away for him. I do believe as well that I think going forward he's decent. I think if that's the way Ange wants to play, a flying fullback, then I think that he could be, I'm not saying he'd be the answer, but I don't think he'd be a bad backup, because in the day, we've spent nearly £4 or 5 million in 2 left-backs, so
I know.
You've got to play one of them at least, haven't you? You can't sell two of them right away, because, again, that'd be another failure in that side of the club.
Yeah, I think with Ballingolly, I was very critical of Ballingolly when he first came in. And then I was trying to take a sort of step back and look at it sort of, you know, objectively and say, well, no, why is he doing those things? You know, why is he out of position? Why is he, you know, 20 yards up the park from where he should be, and gaps are getting left behind him? And I don't know, maybe he just needs a bit of coaching. Maybe where he played before, he used to just bomb up his players, attacking wing back, and that was his game. And maybe he just needs a bit of help. I was listening to an interview with Micah Richards, who was a player we actually looked after. And he was saying that when he was coming through Manchester City, he was a midfielder.
All right.
He played centre mid, and then he dropped back to centre half. But when he got in the Manchester City first team, they played him at right back. And he said, I've never played right back before in my life. He said, I tell a lie, I think I played right back once in an under-21 game, and he played well. And the manager went, Stuart Pearce, I think it was at the time, went, get him in the first team. Because Micah had such a big presence, a big physicality about him, he was a big lad, strong boy, you know, powerful. He went, I'm going to play him at right back. So when he was playing right back and Roberto Mancini came in, Roberto Mancini said to him, why are you there? You shouldn't be standing there. You should be here. You should be in this position. Your body shape's wrong. And he went, what's wrong with you? And he said, I've only started playing here about a year ago in the first team in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? Some of these guys that are coming through, you take for granted that they know what they're doing. But they need that bit of coaching about them. They need somebody to put their arm around them and say, he said Roberto Mancini was the best coach he ever had because he made him such a better player. And see when the penny dropped about him playing right back, he was unstoppable at one point in the Premier League. Everybody was flying, so it was
similar. It reminds me, he's similar to Kyle Walker, the way he's up and down that line.
Oh, absolutely. He was. It was bright. It's just the injuries just killed him. And they end up, and listen, he's going on to have a great TV career now anyway. But that was a really interesting listen to, you know, sometimes you've got to take a step back and say, you know, why are these guys making these mistakes? Maybe isn't he comfortable in that position? Yeah. You said yourself, Ryan, if you were playing football, you wanted to play through the middle as a striker, and you get moved into the wing, and
you almost
go, wait a minute, I'm normally used to all this space around the room. I can turn left, I can turn right. Now I can only really go infield. Do you know what I mean? Say outside or infield. So it's hard for players, and that happens at the sort of professional level as well. So listen, Ollie's coming in, he's coming back, a fresh start for him, just like with every other player. And you never know, we might see a player turn up for us there and do well for us next year.
I says again, there's every day with Celtic, there's a lot to talk about. But again, one wee thing as well, I did mention the other day, I meant to mention at the start, my friend's dad's got a charity game, the 25th of July, it's St Anthony's Junior Grun, show kick-off 12 o'clock, it's for charity. Again, I know cancer is a big thing in people's lives, it's an annual game for his dad, and obviously it's my mate's granddad. It's a very worthwhile cause, and again, I'll be playing in it, so you know, my boots kind of dusted, and I guess a very, very good cause, and I will put the links up on my Twitter and Facebook stuff. Anybody wants to donate any money they can, a penny, a pound, it's all going to a good cause, and again, hopefully can raise some money, and obviously it hopefully helps a lot of people. Again, William, thanks for your time, mate. I really appreciate it, and again, hopefully get a decent wee kind of result tomorrow, get some fitness under the belt, and again, hopefully next week we're unveiling some signings, we're all happy clappers again.
Absolutely, mate. Let's hopefully that happens. And no, listen, a pleasure coming back as well, mate. Really enjoyed having the chat, and yeah, we'll speak again soon, mate.
Thanks a lot, William. Take care, mate. Cheers.
No problem. All the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.